Good morning, church. If you don't know me, I'm Amanda, and I am the curate here. And if you don't know what a curate is, come and ask me, and I'll try and explain afterwards. Could I have my PowerPoint, please? So, what was going on here in the desert? Why was it that 10 of the spies were scared, and 2, Joshua and Caleb, held a different opinion? After all, they had the same experience of the same release from Egypt, and they'd scouted the same land. Were Joshua and Caleb glass half full kind of people, and the rest of them were glass half empty? Or were Joshua and Caleb tiggers by nature, if you do the whole Winnie the Pooh thing? You know, let's go for it. And the rest of the 10 were Eeyores. Oh no, it's too hard. Our passage starts with Moses being told by God to send spies into the land that he was giving to the Israelites. A reminder of the promise that God had made to Abraham to give his descendants the very land that the spies were going to check out. And the spies would have been really aware of this promise because it would have been part of their verbal history, passed down through the generations. And the very fact that the spies were part of this huge nation of Israel, this huge nation of God's people, 600,000 men left Egypt, along with the women and children. And that was evidence as well that God was keeping his promise to Abraham. Because when Jacob and his family went to live in Egypt with Joseph, they numbered 70. So over the next 400 years, God had kept his promise and they had multiplied into a vast nation. And at first sight, if you imagine 600,000 people coming towards you, it probably was too numerous to count. Part of the evidence that the nation was evidence that God was keeping his promise. And once the spies went into the land, they took the same route. There's two maps on my PowerPoint. One is the route that Abraham took, coming all the way, I think this is the pointer, yeah. So this is Abraham, no, this one's Abraham's, when he left, came from up to Haran, and then down into Egypt and back out. And the spies going in through the Negev to Hebron and all the way up and back down. So they took the same route that Abraham had walked. They went through the Negev, through to Bethel, and then Canaan, and finally to Hebron, where Abraham is buried. This should not have been a shock for the spies. They were retracing the steps. They were being reminded of God's promise. Raymond Brown, in his commentary, said that the 12 spies were on ground hallowed by memories of God's faithfulness. Here, the patriarchs had lived and loved, walked and worshipped, believed and obeyed. Surely in such honored territory, the spies would have been encouraged that the Lord who had helped their forebears would not fail them. And if you don't know who the patriarchs are, that's Abraham and Jacob and Isaac. They brought back amazing produce from the land, more evidence that God was speaking truth in what he was promising. A land filled with good things, a land flowing with milk and honey. And even the presence of the Amalekites, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, and the Canaanites was confirmation that God was speaking the truth to them and where he was leading them. Because in Exodus 3:17, as God calls Moses, he tells him, I have promised to bring you up out of your misery in Egypt into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. Yet none of it, this seemed, encouraged 10 of the 12 spies to see that God would give them success. It was only Caleb and Joshua who brought back a positive report and, importantly, an attitude of obedience to God. Former chief rabbi Jonathan Sacks points out that the 10 negative spies made the fatal mistake of projecting their feelings onto those living in the land. They said, we are like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and so we were in their eyes. But that wasn't the case at all. When the Israelites finally get into the promised land, they find out in Joshua from Rahab that a great fear of you has fallen on us, she tells them, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. The people knew, the people in the land, the Canaanites and the Amalekites and the others, they knew what God had done for the Israelites in saving them from the Egyptians. And so they said, our hearts melted in fear and everyone's courage failed because of you. Had the spies all come back with the same attitude as Caleb and Joshua, then the inhabitants of the land, even though they were giants, were literally terrified of the Israelites and their God. And so victory would have been assured. However, that's not what happened. Jonathan Sacks uses some research by modern-day psychologist Carol Dweck to explain what's going on. And Dweck suggests that people fall into two categories, those with a fixed mindset and those with a growth mindset. Those with a fixed mindset tend to avoid difficult challenges because they fear failure. They think it will expose them as inadequate. And so they are reluctant to take risks. They play it safe. People with a growth mindset react differently. They don't just seek challenge, they thrive on it. The bigger the challenge, the more they stretch. And when do people with a fixed mindset thrive? When things are safely within their grasp. If things get challenging, they lose interest. The fixed mindset lives with a constant fear of failure. The growth mindset doesn't think in terms of failing at all. And the 10 spies, Sacks suggests, had a fixed mindset. Verse 13, Graham asked me if he could skip the names, and I said, no, it was important. And it's important because all of the spies were leaders in their tribes. They were men of status, men with a reputation to guard. They were thought of highly by others. And according to Dweck's theory, people who have a reputation to guard, people of whom a lot is expected, tend to be risk averse. They don't like to fail, so they tend to play it safe, stay in their comfort zones, etc. Which is why they may have come back, why the spies, if you like, came back and said, in effect, we cannot win against the Canaanites, therefore we should not even try. Caleb and Joshua were different. Sacks suggests this is for two reasons. Caleb was from the tribe of Judah, and Judah himself was the brother, if you remember back into Genesis, Judah was the brother that had suggested selling Joseph into slavery. And he was taught a lesson by his daughter-in-law, Tamar, and he obviously learned from his failures. He recognized that Tamar was more righteous in her behavior than he had been, and he offered to remain a slave in Egypt rather than his brother Benjamin, because he knew that having lost Joseph, losing Benjamin was likely to kill his father. Judah, says Sachs, was the best example of someone in Genesis who takes adversity as a learning experience rather than a failure. Judah learnt from his mistakes, and this gave him, according to Dweck, a growth mindset, which Sachs suggested he passed on to his tribe. Caleb was from the tribe of Judah. Joshua had a growth mindset for a different reason. Moses changed his name from Hosea to Joshua. And biblically, a change of name implies a change of character. Abram becomes Abraham. Jacob becomes Israel. Simon became Peter. Saul became Paul. According to the Mishnah, the Jewish book of law, a name change is like saying, you are not the same person you were before. It's why in some Christian traditions, a new name is given at the baptism of an adult. A tangible reminder that you are not the same person you were before. That you are a new creation. In Joshua's renaming, according to Sachs, it implied a change from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset for Joshua. And he became different to the other 10 spies. Hello. So, people with a growth mindset do not fear failure. They relish challenges. They know if they fail, they will try again until they succeed. As Thomas Edison famously was reported to have said, I have not failed once. I have just found 10,000 ways that did not work. It cannot be a coincidence that the two people among the spies who had a growth mindset were also the two who were unafraid of the risks and the trials of conquering the land. Nor can it be accidental that the 10 others, all of whom carried the burden of people's expectations as leaders and princes and men of high rank, were reluctant to do so. But where does that leave us? If we have a fixed mindset, because I'm guessing that most of you at this precise moment in time are thinking, have I got a fixed mindset or a growth mindset? How do I react to it? Do I steer away from, am I, you know, all those things going through. I mean, I did it when I was reading this. But if we have a fixed mindset, are we fearful? Do we run away when God calls us to something new and slightly unsafe? The fact is that God's default position for our lives is not a fixed mindset. It is a growth mindset. Because we, as followers of Christ, are new creations. We are made new in Christ. We're given, if you like, a new name. Romans 12:2 reminds us of this. It says, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, his pleasing, and his perfect will. God calls us to faith and to trust in his goodness and his faithfulness to us. Jeremiah 29:11 reminds us that he has plans for our prospering and not for our failure. He knows that sometimes we fail, but he is able to lift us out of that. The whole of the history of the Bible is one of failure and redemption, getting it wrong, moving away from God, and being restored. Most of the great heroes of the Bible still got it wrong at times. Abraham, not trusting God's promise of a child, passing his wife off as his sister. Elijah, defeating all the prophets of Baal and then running away from Jezebel. David, the story of David and Bathsheba is just one epic fail after another. Peter denied Jesus. Even when or if we fail, Romans 8:28 reminds us that he is able to turn everything to his good. God calls us to have faith, and he calls us to take risks, and he lifts us if we take risks and it goes wrong. Numbers 14:24 tells us that Caleb had a different spirit. What he and Joshua had that the other spies did not was faith. Faith that overrode the fear, faith that trusted that God would do what he had promised. And it wasn't a blind faith, but it was one based on the experience of what God had done before. The problem is, for the spies, for many in the Bible, for us today, is that the fear is real. And we so often forget what God has done, that we are new creations, that God is able. The spies were fearful of being slaughtered, fearful that God was not able to do what he had promised. And so they rejected his offer of the land, his promise of all the good things that it would offer. But they weren't the first. Adam and Eve did the same thing. They rejected God's gift of the land, the Garden of Eden, and all the good things that it offered, out of fear. Fear that they were missing out on something, that God was holding out on them. They believed Satan rather than trust in God. And we see the same fear in those that would follow Jesus. Think about the rich young ruler, fearful of losing his wealth, fearful of losing his status, not willing to trade his treasure for the treasures of heaven. Today, do we miss out on the best things because we are fearful to let go of what we have or what we think we know? Because it doesn't just have to be stuff, but it can be the safety of our experience, of what we know rather than moving into the unknown. To let fear of what might happen crowd out our trust in God and his promises. That fear kept the Israelites from trusting God. The fear crowded out their memories of all the awful things in Egypt and only brought to mind the good things. In this case, the fish. Do we cling on to the past because we're fearful of what might happen? Do we make excuses not to go forward, to push on with the things that God is calling us to because we're fearful? Do we only remember the good things of past experiences and let our fear drown out the bad? Essentially, there are three types of character that we find in this story. I want you to have a think about which one are you. Are you like Caleb and Joshua, who had faith in God, and who saw what God had done, was doing, had heard what he promised to do, and were prepared to trust him, and those leading the Israelites who had heard from God? Do you have faith to move forward into what God is calling you to do, either personally or here at St. Mark's? Do you have faith in our leadership, in Sadhu and his ability to hear and to discern? Do you have faith for God's promises to us and his call on us as the people of God? Faith to move forward into what God might be calling us here to do? Or are you like the other spies, letting the obstacles outweigh God's promises, letting fear corrode your faith and retreating? And it wasn't that the other spies were just fearful. They actively spread discontent through the camp. They exaggerated the problems. It says, verse 33 and 34, and they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they'd explored. They said, the land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw are a great size. We saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anakim from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. Even to the point of telling lies based on their fears. They didn't know if the land devoured people. And as I said earlier, they were projecting their thoughts. We are like grasshoppers unto the inhabitants. And this negativity had a knock-on effect. It meant the rest of the Israelites became fearful, distrusted God, and rebelled. So finally, you might think you're not like Caleb and Joshua, and you may think you're not like the spies. Are you like the rest of the camp? Happy to believe the words of the negative spies, allowing their fear to become your own without really knowing the truth. It led to the rest of the Israelites actively rejecting those who had faith, who were striving to trust God and to push forward, ostracizing them, condemning them. It led to them defying their leaders, actively defying Moses and Aaron as they tried to lead. And in Numbers 14, we see that the camp tried to stone Joshua and Caleb along with Moses and Aaron as they defend themselves and to try to rally the Israelites to a faith position, to trust in God and to take the land. God calls us to faith. He calls us to trust him, regardless of what is going on around us, regardless of the giants that might seem to be in our path, regardless of the whisperings of Satan in our ear, whether that is in our thoughts or through the words of others. Caleb and Joshua, what made them different was that they had faith. They trusted. They kept in mind the fulfilled promises of the past. It's always good to keep a record of God answering prayers, of the times when God has fulfilled his promises to us, either individually or corporately, so that when we come across those giants, or when God calls us to step out in faith for him and we start to feel the fear, we can look back, remind ourselves that God is faithful and he is able. We just have to be prepared to trust that even if we do it and we fail, he will pick us up, he will restore us, and he will move us forward. We're going to go into a time of extended worship now. And I want to encourage you to listen to God as we worship. Ask him what he's calling you to, where he's calling you. Ask him, am I walking like Caleb and Joshua? Do I have faith? Am I trusting you, walking into the land? Or am I fearful of the giants, whatever they may be? And if I am fearful, am I hindering other people? Or am I being influenced by those who might be fearful, who might be negative? And you know, I just want to encourage you, because I know that some of you are older and you might think, sitting there, well, I've done all that. That only applies to the younger people in church. I've been there, done that. You know, Caleb never lost faith. And he did eventually take the land. And he was 85 years old when he did that. Joshua 14:10 says, I'm just going to read the bit. Now then, just as the Lord had promised, he's kept me alive for 45 years since the time he said this to Moses when Israel moved out into the wilderness. So here I am today, 85 years old. I am still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I am just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was then. Now give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day. Caleb never lost faith, and he kept going, and he didn't think he was too old, so don't think you are either. I'm going to finish with a little bit more wisdom from Jonathan Sacks. He points out a paradoxical but deeply liberating truth. Fear of failure causes us to fail. It's the willingness to fail that allows us to succeed.